Chapter 12. Darwin scowled at his neighbors and started to turn toward the door to the shack, but Sorsha placed a hand on his arm and gave a slight shake of the head.
If they don't already know about your weapons, then you don't want to give them another reason to hate you right now,
she said in a low voice. Darwin pulled his arm free, but he didn't make another move toward the rifle he had left inside the shack, and stared defiantly at the people of Motown.
What the hell are you doing on my property? He demanded.
You brought the mutant here!
An unhappy man in a moth-eaten cape snapped in a high-pitched voice.
I brought my granddaughter here, Darwin replied angrily. After she was chased from her home by a bunch of closed-minded bigots who thought she was perfectly charming until they found out she had a tail.
She's a murderer!
A blonde woman with a double chin and ample bosoms declared.
Then prove it, Darwin snapped back. You know you can't, but you'll let that twit of a priest of yours string her up anyway so you can go back to pretending that you're safe in your homes.
The crowd stirred restlessly, and some of the more adventurous souls took a few steps toward the old plank crossing. Darwin stomped across the porch, which made the whole framework quake, and planted himself at the foot of the little bridge.
This is private property, Darwin declared. And you're all trespassing, so turn yourselves around and get back to your sorry lives, and maybe I won't send the chief out to arrest you.
We deserve answers,
a man in a business suit demanded. He had mud on the edge of his pant legs, and a small river of water was pouring from the back of his hat.
About what? Darwin retorted. About how my granddaughter was the fastest runner on her team, or how she won an award for her poetry, because if you're expecting me to tell you she's some terrible creature that will sneak into your houses and kill you, you won't get that.
The crowd went quiet for a moment, and a few people looked uncomfortably at the crowd, like they weren't sure why they were there.
You have guns,
a timid voice called out from somewhere near the back. The crowd roared its agreement, and once again, everyone turned their focus back to Darwin.
Oh, this again,
Darwin huffed.
You used to carry them when you were a deputy in the pre-magic world, the businessman pointed out. We've all heard you tell those stories.
What do guns have to do with my granddaughter?
Darwin demanded. There was a moment of confusion, and then someone started to push their way to the front of the crowd. Darwin stiffened, and I could see why. The person who emerged from the crowd wore a light brown slouch hat with a brass star. There was no doubt this person was part of the local police department.
Sorry, Charles, the deputy said. Word spread that I was coming out here. They got themselves worked up and started off while I was still meeting with the chief.
Then you can remove them from my property while you're here,
Darwin retorted.
I will make sure they all leave, the deputy agreed, but I do need to ask about your guns.
I fought the urge to turn around and look at the shack to keep my hands from the pocket where the snub nose still rested.
I've been over this how many times with you people?
Darwin snapped.
I don't have any guns. And what does this have to do with my granddaughter's arrest?
The deputy shuffled his feet and looked uncertainly at the crowd.
Oh, hell, Fishman,
Darwin barked.
They've obviously already heard. Apparently I'm the only one who hasn't, so please enlighten me.
There were two more mutants found yesterday out by the Bennett place, the deputy replied.
I did hear that,
Darwin admitted as he glanced at me and Sorsha.
I heard they were dead.
They were,
the deputy agreed.
But the chief says it was gunshots that killed him.
The crowd, which had remained quiet through the exchange, began to hiss and murmur, and I saw a few of the younger men start to pick up rocks.
And?
Darwin demanded as he ignored the crowd.
And the chief thinks your granddaughter used one of your guns to kill him,
the deputy finished.
Why would she do that?
Darwin laughed.
So they wouldn't reveal she was a mutant,
the deputy explained.
But it's not a crime to kill a mutant,
Darwin pointed out.
So what is she being charged with?
Deputy Fishman opened his mouth to respond, but then closed it while he tried to think of an answer.
She's working for a black mage, the businessman insisted.
The deputy shrugged, as if that was as good a reason as any.
"What the hell are you doing here, fishman?"
Darwin demanded.
"I've come to arrest you," the deputy admitted, "for harboring a mutant and possession of banned firearms."
"Good luck with that," Darwin snorted.
An angry murmur swept through the crowd at that, and Deputy Fishman glanced anxiously between the two sides.
"Charles," the deputy sighed.
"You people have searched this property dozens of times," Darwin pointed out. "Have you ever found a gun?"
"No," the deputy admitted.
"So what makes you think you'll find one this time?" Darwin demanded.
"Maybe you should go back to the police department,"
Sorcia said into the sudden silence. Her voice had dropped a register and taken on a very soothing tone.
"Send these people home, and then you can discuss this with the chief."
"Discuss it with the chief," Fishman repeated.
"Ask him where he thinks Darwin has hidden his guns,"
Sorcia suggested. Darwin looked as if he was about to say something, so I quickly shook my head.
"I'll ask the chief where he thinks you would hide the guns," Fishman stated.
"You'll come back later, after you've made sure everyone in the crowd has gone back to the town,"
Sorcia continued.
"Hey!"
someone protested.
"I'll send everyone back to town," Fishman declared, "and then I'll come back to talk to you."
"Fine,"
Darwin replied.
"All right, people," Fishman yelled. "You folks need to get on out of here. You've got no right to be here, so that makes it a matter of trespassing."
"But aren't you going to arrest him?"
someone demanded.
"When I've got my proof,"
Fishman responded as he started to push a few of those closest to the bank of the pond back toward the road.
"Once we have the guns, we can bring him in."
"But what if he comes after us in the night?"
the busty blonde demanded.
"We'll have people watching him and watching the town," the deputy assured her. "Now you folks need to get moving."
The crowd grumbled, but I caught Sorcia's frown and knew she was trying to convince some of the other people in the crowd to leave. It was a trickle at first, as those who had looked less sure about being here led the way along the track. The deputy kept pushing, and Sorcia murmured in her hypnotic voice until even the most stubborn townsman had finally turned his back on us and trudged back through the trees to the Lewistown Road.
"That's a neat little trick,"
Darwin commented, when the only sounds to be heard were the frogs and the birds.
"It won't keep them away forever. They'll come back."
"Then we should probably grab what we can and move on," Darwin replied. "I've got a camp we can use for now until we're ready to break Freya out of jail."
"We'll help you carry stuff," I said as I glanced toward the shack.
"I'm sure you will,"
Darwin snorted as he caught my look. He ducked back into the shack and collected the rifle, then started down the gangway.
"Nice try,"
Sorcia snickered as she trailed after the ex-trooper. "It was worth a shot," I sighed as I followed her. Darwin led us back to the underground home he shared with his granddaughter. We followed him down the steps again, though the door stayed open this time. He went toward the kitchen first and handed Sorcia a large sack and told her to start filling it with whatever food she could find. Then he pulled me back toward the two storage units I'd seen before. He fumbled with a switch on the wall in the first room and studied the boxes piled there.
"Ammo,"
he murmured as he handed me a heavy box.
"Arrows for the bow and MREs."
Another box was added to the one I had in my arms, and then he clicked off the light and went into the next storage room. The itch in my palm was nearly unbearable as I followed him through the door, and I knew this was the room with the rest of the guns. Darwin piled another pair of boxes onto my already weighty load, then grabbed a pair of cases from one of the shelves. He stepped back into the hallway and turned off the light in the storage room before I could stumble across the floor and back into the buzzing light of the hallway.
"Food!"
Darwin yelled out as he picked up the bow that Freya had carried when we first met her. I saw him slip the rifle into the quiver, and I nearly volunteered to carry the bow and arrows as well, just so I could be close to the gun.
"I think I've got everything,"
Sorcia replied as she shuffled from the kitchen with the sack in her arms.
"Well, let's get going,"
Darwin ordered as he started up the stairs. Sorcia and I watched him disappear through the door in confusion until his face reappeared and he held out a hand.
"Hand me the sack,"
he instructed. Sorcia lifted the bag as far as she could, and Darwin grabbed it with both hands. He tugged it over the edge, then held a hand out for Sorsha. She quickly climbed up the steps, then disappeared from view as she stepped to the side. I set the boxes on the ground first, then handed them to Darwin one by one. When the last box had made it to the top, I clambered up the steps and back into the rain. Darwin nodded, then dropped the door back into place. This time, though, he slipped his hand beneath the latch, and I heard a lock click into place.
"Don't want anyone ransacking the place," he said when he stood up. "Now stay close by and watch your step."
This last bit was added as Darwin handed me a stack of boxes once again before he slung the bag of food over his own shoulder and grabbed the cases. He looked at Sorsha for a moment, and she quickly snatched up the bow and quiver. Satisfied that we had everything, Darwin walked off into the mist and rain, and promptly vanished from view. Sorsha and I exchanged looks, then quickly darted off in the direction we'd seen the ex-trooper take.
"I warned you to stay close," Darwin grunted when we finally caught up to him.
"We will," I quickly assured him. He grunted again, then suddenly peeled off into the woods. If there was a trail he was following, I couldn't see it, but then I couldn't see much of anything over the boxes I carried. I stumbled along and tried not to trip over a tree root or slip and fall on a pile of wet leaves, both of which became more difficult the deeper we ventured into the forest. We finally stepped into a clearing, and I realized that the rain had started to come down harder. It pelted me in the face and the back of my neck, despite the hat and jacket that I wore, and I could feel it dribble down my back beneath my shirt. Without even looking, I knew the hem of my pants were probably muddy, and my boots would need a good scrubbing. I glanced toward the sky, but there was nothing but dark clouds to be seen.
"Now what?"
Sorsha asked, as she looked around. The clearing where Darwin had led us to was the edge of more bog, and the ground we stood on was quickly turning to soup beneath our feet. The only direction that even seemed viable was the one we had just come from, but Darwin moved toward the edge of the water without hesitation. He barreled through a layer of reeds and cattails, and then I heard his boots step onto wood. Sorsha and I exchanged glances, then followed more carefully through the mud. We found the small wooden platform easily enough, and I set the boxes I carried on the planks next to the sack and cases that Darwin had lugged through the woods.
"Give me a hand," Darwin ordered when I straightened up.
It took a moment, but I realized he had a small boat hidden in the growth. It was covered with a camouflage tarp and tied down to the dock. I removed the tarp while Darwin righted the boat and dropped it into the water.
"We'll be able to lose them as we move deeper into the swamp," Darwin noted as he started to pack our supplies into the boat. "There's not one of them that knows this area as well as I do."
"Won't this make it harder to get back to the town?"
Sorsha asked.
"We'll actually be closer to the town, but they won't figure it out as long as we're careful."
With that, Darwin helped Sorsha into the boat, and then gave me an impatient look when I didn't immediately leap into the boat as well. I clambered in and took a seat next to the Irishwoman. Darwin grunted, then stepped into the boat. He handed me one of the paddles that had been stowed under the benches, then sat down at the front of the boat with the other paddle. The trip through the swamp was one of the quieter and more eerie ones I've ever taken. There was little sound beyond the noise of our paddles as we dipped them into the water, and even that was muffled by the fog that hid everything from view except the largest of the trees. The boat scraped against skeletal branches and floating driftwood, though it was impossible to see anything in the water before we hit it. Despite Darwin's assurance that he knew where he was going, it was impossible to tell where we were. Whatever landmarks might exist were lost in the rain, the mist, and the clouds that seemed to have moved closer to the earth. Darwin stopped paddling at one point, and we started to drift in the slow pace of the water. He peered into the dense fog as if he could somehow see through it, then leaned over the edge of the boat and studied the water. Apparently satisfied with what he had found, he started to paddle again, this time toward the bugle call of a crane.
"That's got it," Darwin muttered a few minutes later.
We turned into a tunnel shaped by tangled tree limbs overhead and lined with a dense thicket of reeds that pressed against the boat. We pushed off from the plants in this section rather than the water, and I was certain that we would stop soon and tramp across more muddy ground to this secret camp. But the tunnel suddenly ended, and we found ourselves on the edge of a small lake. Darwin turned around and grinned, then started to paddle toward the far shore. He directed us toward another dock. this one little more than a pair of pilings and a few weather-beaten scraps of pine wood. But Darwin tied up the boat quickly, then leapt from the boat onto the dock without any apparent concerns. When he didn't fall through into the water below, I helped Sorsha climb onto the dock as well.
You said we're closer to the town?
Sorsha asked, as she looked around the forest that ringed the lake.
After all that?
We're just on the other side of town,
Darwin replied as I handed him the supplies from the boat.
Most people don't even remember the swamp stretches that far. Of course, it helps that McGraw doesn't let anybody use this lake.
I said as I peered into the trees.
Oh, he lets me use it,
Darwin assured us.
We have an understanding.
That's good, I replied, as I climbed onto the dock with the bow and quiver.
Camp's just ahead. McGraw and I set it up years ago, though he doesn't make it out here much anymore.
Who's this McGraw?
Sorsha asked as she accepted the bow and quiver from me.
Just another old fart,
Darwin sighed as he handed me the stack of boxes yet again.
He and his wife owned this before the meteorite hit, and in the immediate aftermath, they opened it up to people who needed a hand. When the guests tried to turn it into a town, though, McGraw put his foot down, said the lake was his, and it was going to stay that way. There was quite a stink, let me tell you.
I'll guess you were one of the few who sided with McGraw, I remarked.
You'd be right about that, Darwin replied. That's why I still have privileges.
Darwin had started down a well-worn path that led into the pines and oaks that surrounded the lake. Deep beneath the trees, the fog vanished and the sounds of wildlife returned. The rain started to lessen as well, and a few slim rays of sunlight peeked through the leaves. It was positively normal, and I could almost forget why we were out here. Near the edge of a brook, the ex-trooper suddenly veered off the path and climbed up a small hill. I tried not to grumble as I picked my way slowly along and wondered if it would really be any great loss if I were to lose the boxes in the brook. As I reached the top of the hill, I nearly dropped the boxes in frustration. Darwin had vanished again, but I spotted Sorsha near a stand of trees. She gave me an encouraging smile, then pointed up. And then I nearly let out a whoop of joy. We had indeed finally reached Darwin's camp. Though camp wasn't quite the right word. It was a treehouse, though bigger and better built than the ones we used to build as kids. Darwin was on the deck with a pair of binoculars, and he barely acknowledged my arrival at the top of the hill as he peered at something in the distance. A moment later, he held up a mage light and flicked it off and on several times. He peered through the binoculars again after that, and then nodded at whatever he saw.
"Just letting McGraw know we're here,"
Darwin called down when he saw I was still standing near the edge of the hill.
How?
I started to ask, but Sorsha had already walked to my side and taken one of the boxes from the pile.
There are stairs. They're just well hidden.
She led me around to the other side of the tree stand toward a thicket of wisteria. The vines were thick and heavy, and had probably been there since before the meteorite. But they also made for convenient camouflage, as I discovered, for hidden beneath the tangle were the steps that led up toward the treehouse's entrance.
This is clever, I noted as I started slowly up the stairs. I don't think I've ever seen a treehouse like this.
The McGraws built this for their own family,
Darwin explained as I finally stepped onto the platform that served as the deck for the treehouse. Darwin took the rest of the boxes from me and set them under a tarp at the far edge of the deck, then opened the cedar door that led inside.
Did they live here?
Sorsha asked as she looked around the treehouse, and I wondered the same thing as well. It had a sofa and two chairs, a small writing desk, a compact kitchen with its own table and chairs, as well as the sack of food we had lugged from the underground home, and a loft where I could just make out the foot of a bed. There was also artwork on the walls, a wall of windows that looked out over the lake, and a stove that kept everything toasty warm.
They built it as a fun place to spend time together on the lake during summer, originally,
Darwin said as he kicked off his boots and set them on an old carpet by the door, then draped his jacket over a hook.
After the meteorite hit, McGraw turned it into more of a watchtower. He and I added a few things over the years after that and made sure it was always stocked. I doubt there's anyone left in Morristown that still knows it's even here.
What about McGraw's family? I asked as I copied Darwin and removed my boots and jacket. Sorsha did as well, and we soon had a nice little line of muddy boots and damp jackets by the door.
Wife passed away a few years back,
Darwin replied as he opened the stove, then added a few pieces of wood and some kindling.
Lost one daughter in those first months after the meteorite hit, and the other one a few years later. His son is nearby, but he doesn't come out here much. He's got his own farm to tend to.
I can't believe people used to build tree houses like this,
Sorsha mused as she moved toward the windows and drank in the view of the lake.
This is nicer than many homes.
Those were the days,
Darwin snickered. How often do you come out here? I asked as I wandered around the compact space. I opened a few of the cabinets in the kitchen and found pots of herbs and spices, clean plates and cups, jars of pickled vegetables, and something called a veg-o-matic.
Just enough to keep it in shape,
Darwin admitted as he closed the grate on the stove and looked around.
Freya spent a lot of time here when she first came to Morristown, but she got pretty lonely since I was at the main base and McGraw pretended she wasn't here. That was to protect her, of course, but still, it probably stung.
It's a good hiding place. Most people don't look up.
And this place blends in nicely with the trees, one of the updates we added later.
So, what do we do now?
Sorsha asked as she tested one of the chairs.
I'd like to get more information about their plans for Freya, Darwin replied as he sat down on the sofa. Just to get an idea of how much time we have to work with.
But they'll be looking for you in the town, I pointed out. And if you do show yourself, then all that trouble we went through to hide our trail will be useless.
So Hex and I will have to go to the town. There's less chance that we'll be recognized.
But still a chance,
Darwin snorted. We did use his name at the general store, I admitted. And there were a lot of people in that mob.
Please don't suggest that McGraw be the one to investigate,
Sorsha huffed.
That old fart would probably hear about the latest cure-all at the general store and forget why he was supposed to be there,
Darwin said with a shake of his head.
No, it'll have to be the three of us. If we're careful, we can get in and out of town before anyone knows we were there.
We should slip in at night, I said. The town's a lot less busy then.
Agreed,
Darwin said with a nod. We have a few hours before nightfall, I said as I glanced out the windows at the silver waters of the lake.
I guess we could take the bow and practice a bit. I haven't had much chance to use one recently, and I would hate to miss my shots when it counts.
Well, I guess I could spend some time with Hex, Darwin added. Show him what I have in the armaments department.
I perked up at that and glanced toward the cases that Darwin had carried the whole way here. I noticed the rifle sitting nearby as well, and I almost drooled at the thought of holding it finally.
I'll just get my boots back on,
Sorsha declared as she moved toward the door. She grabbed up her boots and jacket, the bow and the quiver, and then slipped back out onto the porch. I heard her drop into one of the cedar chairs on the deck, and then a few moments later she walked across the beams toward the stairs.
Let's do this outside, Darwin suggested.
We gathered up our own boots, and Darwin collected the rifle and the cases as well. We stepped outside into the cool air and quickly slipped on our boots and jackets. Darwin walked toward the end of the deck, near the spot where I'd seen him signal to McGraw. A pair of brackets had been nailed to the treehouse and a cedar board placed across them to make for a cheap and easy tabletop. Darwin placed the cases on the table, then turned to look at me.
How much do you really know about guns? He asked.
What do you mean? I said with a shrug. Evan gave me a book about guns, and I've looked through that, but I haven't figured out how to create one just by looking at the picture.
But you do know how to handle them. Do you know the proper way to hold one when you're just carrying it, or the proper hand position to use when you fire a gun? Do you know what to do when someone hands you a gun?
I hesitated.
Thought so, the ex-trooper huffed. We'll have to go over some of the safety aspects as well, obviously.
Evan mentioned something about that, I admitted. But it's been okay. I've only shot the people I meant to shoot, and most of the time I only need one shot.
Then you've been lucky, Darwin snapped as he shook his head. Freaking mages think they know everything.
I thought of a few snarky responses, but the guns were so close now and I really had to touch them. I told myself to be patient and let Darwin do this the way he thought best. The guy knew about guns, and I wanted to get better at them. So it was my time to just shut up and listen.
"Let's start with the 5 most important rules about firearms," Darwin declared as he crossed his arms and glared at me. "These rules are absolute. If you don't follow them, you don't get to fire the guns."
"Okay," I conceded as I tried not to scratch my palm or stare at the cases that sat close by.
"Rule number 1," Darwin intoned. "Always keep your weapon pointed in a safe direction. That means away from people and anything else you don't want to shoot. If you like your dog, don't point a gun at it."
"Got it," I declared.
"That leads directly to rule number 2,
Darwin continued in his very serious voice.
"And this is probably the most important rule there is. Always, and I mean always, treat every gun as if it is loaded."
"I can do that," I replied.
"Except you have no idea what I mean by that," Darwin snorted.
"I do, too. It means, don't play with guns, especially if they have bullets in them."
"It means that if you always act like the gun is loaded, then you'll always be following rules 1 and 2, even if the gun is unloaded,"
Darwin said cryptically. "So don't even point an unloaded gun at something I don't want to shoot," I translated. "Yeah, that makes sense. So you can be absolutely sure there will never be an accident."
"Now you're getting it," Darwin said. "If you're fucking around with a knife and you cut yourself, well, your dumbass is going to get stitches, but you probably won't die. If you fuck around with a gun, either you or someone you like is most likely going to get killed. Guns are beyond dangerous, so pay attention to these rules."
"Got it," I said as I repeated the first 2 rules in my head. Darwin didn't look convinced about my level of understanding, but he took a deep breath, then moved on.
"Rule number 3, the ex-trooper announced. "Keep your trigger finger outside the guard and off the trigger until you're ready to fire."
"Sure, that makes sense," I declared, though I felt the heat rise in my cheeks as I remembered how I'd had ran through Evan's school with my finger on the trigger.
"Uh-huh,"
Darwin snickered.
"Don't lie to me. You've kept your finger on the trigger even when you weren't ready to fire, haven't you?"
"It was during the middle of a battle with the mages," I asserted.
"Doesn't matter," Darwin snapped. "If you're not ready to shoot, keep that finger off the trigger. There's just too many ways it can go wrong otherwise."
"I believe you," I insisted. "I just never thought about this before. Hell, I'd never even handled a gun until a few days ago."
"Well, good thing Evan sent you to me," Darwin sighed. "What kind of crazy magic dreams up a gun mage and doesn't bother to include the basics of gun safety as part of the package?"
"Well, I don't know how magic works," I said with a shake of my head. "I know a little about each gun, like what the bullet is supposed to look like, but that's it."
"Freaking magic," the ex-trooper griped. "Okay, let's try rule number 4. Know your target, know your line of fire, and know what lies beyond your target."
"Right," I agreed. "I understand that."
"Do you really?"
Darwin demanded. Shoot only at your target," I summarized. It was, after all, the same lesson we'd had with bows and crossbows.
"Good Lord,"
Darwin sighed as he shook his head.
"Look, it comes down to this. The only thing you ever want to shoot is your target. In a controlled situation, like a driving range, that's easy to do. But when you're in the field, so to speak, that becomes a lot harder. Your target will probably be moving and possibly firing back at you, and there will be other people and objects around that you don't want to shoot. You need to make sure before you pull the trigger that there's nothing in the path between the end of your gun and the target, and you also need to be aware of what's behind your target in case the target moves, or what's behind your target moves, or your bullet hits the right target and keeps going through. And remember, bullets move a hell of a lot faster than arrows. You don't have enough time to adapt and change."
"That seems like a lot to take in," I replied.
"You can do it quickly, and the more you do it, the better you'll get," Darwin stated. "But you need to do it, or you'll end up with a lot of bad shots."
"Okay, so I have to study the area before I shoot," I said with a nod. Darwin closed his eyes for a moment and rubbed his forehead. I'd seen my father do the same thing whenever he was frustrated, and it was usually followed by a declaration about a headache coming on.
"Last rule," the ex-trooper said with a sigh, "and this one is going to be tough for us, and I'm not sure how we'll accomplish it, but you should always wear appropriate eye and ear protection."
"I've heard that before," I replied as I thought about the warning on the box of buckshot.
"Yeah, we'll have to work on that," Darwin mused. "Now, I've got earplugs and safety glasses that I use when I'm going to fire a gun, and Freya has a set that I gave her, but that's all I have. Maybe if you find an abandoned sporting goods store, you could scavenge for what you need."
"Sporting goods store, got it," I agreed. Darwin still looked skeptical about my ability to understand the rules or my willingness to follow them, but after a moment he shook his head, then glanced toward the table where the cases rested. I could see him consider the options, and then he pulled a pouch from one of the interior pockets of his jacket. He pulled out two ovoid objects, attached to each other by a long cord, and a piece of plastic with little arms, similar to what Evan had worn over his eyes.
"For ears and eyes,"
Darwin announced as he draped the cord around his neck and placed the plastic on the bridge of his nose.
"Now, let's start with something easy."
With that, the ex-trooper picked up the smallest case and opened it to reveal a handgun, like the Colt revolver or the Smith & Wesson snubnose.
"Probably the most common weapon carried by law enforcement before the meteorite,"
Darwin said as he pulled the weapon from the case. It was black and shorter than the Colt revolver, but without the chopped look of the snubnose. It was perfectly proportioned and looked like it was sized to fit exactly in my hand. I could see the texture on the grip and the word Glock etched into the metal on the barrel. I started to reach for it, but Darwin pulled the weapon away from my hand. The ex-trooper pulled a slanted box from the grip, peered inside, then snapped it back into place. Next, he pulled the rear half of the barrel back and checked inside the weapon itself. Satisfied with whatever he saw, the gun expert closed the weapon and held it up for my inspection.
"Glock 19. 9mm, lightweight. It's considered a compact handgun, so it's smaller than most other 9mm models, which makes it easy to handle and to carry. This one comes with the standard magazine capacity, so you'll only have 15 bullets instead of 17 or 19.
He pulled the slanted box from the bottom of the grip again and held it out for my inspection.
"This is the magazine," the ex-trooper explained. "The bullets are loaded in here, and then you place that in here."
He jammed the slanted box into the bottom of the grip, and I heard a click as it moved into place. He pointed it out over the trees again, this time with both hands on the gun, and pulled the trigger. Of course, nothing happened beyond a faint click, but I could imagine the sound for myself.
"Now, the Glock is a semi-automatic," Darwin said as he handed the gun to me.
"Oh, it's really light," I said in surprise, as I held the gun for a moment, felt it imprint upon my hand, and then started to point it toward the trees.
"No!"
Darwin snapped, and I froze in place. "What?" I asked in confusion.
"Rule number two," he snapped.
Always treat every gun as if it's loaded," I recited as I lowered the gun and stared at it. "But you just showed me..."
"Doesn't matter," the ex-trooper insisted. "You need to check it for yourself."
"Okay," I stammered as I thought about what he had done.
"Point away from anyone and anything else while you're doing it," Darwin warned.
I nodded as I turned the gun toward the surrounding woods. I took a deep breath, told myself it was simple, pressed the button on the grip, pulled the magazine from the grip, and peered inside. It was still empty, so I slid it back into place, then pulled back the rear of the gun and looked inside the hole on the side of the barrel. It was empty as well, so I pushed it back into place and glanced at Darwin.
"Better,"
Darwin grunted.
"Every time someone hands you a gun, check to see if it's loaded, even if you have just seen them check to see if it's loaded. Get it?"
"Got it," I said, as I smiled down at the weapon in my hands.
"Now, the 9mm can fire a lot faster than anything else you've handled so far. That can be handy in a bad situation, but you can't let yourself get carried away either. You'll shoot through those 15 bullets and have nothing left for the rest of that army of mages that's descending on you."
"It seems very easy to use," I commented as I lifted it to my shoulder.
"Even with a full magazine, it's nice and easy," Darwin agreed. Very little recoil and accurate as all get out, especially if you're careful with your bullets.
I aimed toward a distant tree and pulled the trigger. I heard the faint click, but when I tried to pull the trigger again, nothing happened. Confused, I lowered the gun and studied the trigger.
When you fire the bullet in a Glock, the recoil forces the slide back, the ex-trooper explained. That allows the extractor to remove the spent cartridge and the firing pin to reset so you can pull the trigger again. To load the next bullet, you have to move the slide forward. That strips the next bullet in the magazine and forces it up the ramp and into the chamber. It's a system built around the energy of the bullet resetting the mechanism.
Darwin promptly demonstrated by pulling the slide back again, then pushing it forward. When he pressed the trigger, I heard the weapon click. Do I have to slide it forward after every shot? I asked.
Let me show you, Darwin replied. There is a spring in the front of the gun around what's called a guide rod. This rod always forces the slide forward. You probably felt it pull when you yanked the slide back to see if it was unloaded.
Yeah, I said as he pulled the slide again. Sure enough, I could see the guide rod at the front of the weapon that was pointed in the same direction as the barrel.
This lever on the left side is the slide release. It hooks on the slide and keeps it back. Then you can insert a full magazine, press the release button, and then the slide will move forward and load your next bullet into the chamber.
Wow, that's really smart, I said.
Yeah, he snickered. Glocks are great guns. But something to consider is that not every weapon empties with the slide back like this. So it wouldn't be a bad habit to always rack the slide back to get that first round chambered.
I nodded as he handed the weapon back to me. I pulled the slide back as I had seen him do, then pushed it forward. When I pulled the trigger, I heard the faint click, and I smiled like a kid who'd just discovered a secret hoard of candy. The Glock was so light that I could imagine myself pulling it out in all sorts of tricky situations. I pictured a fast-moving mutant and swiveled the gun as if I was tracking a target. Then I tried shooting one-handed from around the edge of the building. Before I knew it, I was testing one-handed shots from all sorts of crazy poses, and I completely forgot that Darwin was even there as I lost myself in a fierce battle with a group of fire mages.
Now, in a pinch, you can fire with one hand,
Darwin interrupted as he watched me.
But for best control, you should always try and keep both hands on the weapon, especially with Glocks. They tend to have FTEs if you don't really have a tight grip on them.
FTE? I asked.
Failure to eject, Charles answered. It's when the brass gets stuck in the slide after the bullet is fired. You'll have to rack the slide to clear it. Glocks are very reliable weapons that will fire covered in mud or gunk. But if you don't have a tight grip, the weight of the slide will pull the lightweight body up and back too much, and the casing won't line up with the ejector.
So, keep a tight grip, I replied sadly as all my grand visions faded away.
Let's move on,
Darwin suggested, as he held out his hand for the Glock. I reluctantly returned it to its owner, who checked again for bullets before he returned it to its case. You do that every time, I said.
Every time,
Darwin agreed as he smiled at me.
You're starting to get it.
Darwin picked up the gun he'd carried when he had confronted Sorsha and I after Freya's arrest. It reminded me a bit of the Maverick, with two stacked barrels, but the bottom barrel was sealed except for a small hole and a grooved canister around it. Darwin held the gun toward me with the barrel pointed toward the trees. Without saying a word, the ex-trooper pointed toward a button on top of the gun, which he pushed backward until it covered a red dot. Next, the silent guru turned the weapon upside down and held it up to show me the bottom. It wasn't solid on the bottom, but had a small chamber where I could just see the metal end of a big bullet. The ex-trooper then pointed toward a small clip that held the bullet in place. With his thumb, he pushed the clip downward, and a bullet in a red plastic case, just like the ones we'd found in the mutant wasteland, slid into the chamber. Darwin repeated that three more times until no more bullets appeared in the chamber. Then he turned the gun over, pulled back the canister that slid along the bottom barrel, checked along the edge of the gun, then pulled back the canister one last time.
Do you know what this is?
The ex-trooper asked as he finally held the gun up for my inspection.
A rifle, I replied with certainty.
A rifle?
he sighed. This is a Mossberg 500 Thunder Ranch tactical pump-action 12-gauge shotgun with dual extractors, twin action ejectors, and breacher-style muzzle. It holds 5 shots, and it's hard to miss with any of them. It's very reliable and easy to maintain. Probably one of the best no-nonsense guns ever built. With that, he held the gun out toward me. I accepted it gratefully and let myself soak in the feel of the gun for several seconds as it imprinted upon me before I ran through the same sequence I had just watched Darwin perform. When he nodded at my inspection, I actually smiled in reply. Having successfully completed Rules 1 and 2, I could take the time to study the Mossberg 500. The weapon was lighter than I expected, but there was something about the shape of it that spoke of power. It was flat black in color, which also added to its sense of menace, and I had a feeling that firing this would be unlike any of the other weapons I had fired before.
Now, you don't just pull the trigger with a pump action, Darwin noted as he took the shotgun back. The guns you've used so far have all made it easy for you.
You have to slide the canister or something to reload it? I guessed as I tried to make sense of the images that had flashed through my head when I held the shotgun.
That's right,
Darwin said, as he set his stance and pointed the gun over the tops of the surrounding trees. I watched as he aimed at a target, then quickly pulled back the canister before he pulled the trigger. I was disappointed when nothing happened, even though I knew there was no ammunition in the weapon.
Try it,
Darwin instructed, as he handed the weapon back to me. I completed the first and second rules, then copied his stance and picked out a nearby tree. I pulled the pump and then the trigger, and for the briefest of moments I thought I could hear the rumble of the weapon as it fired.
Now, since this is a tactical weapon and meant to be fired quickly and repeatedly, the recoil is more than manageable, even if you use a more powerful load, but it's still gonna kick you. Remember, whatever you add in power leaving the gun will come back to you as recoil in the arm and shoulder. You always need to adjust accordingly.
You can change the type of bullets you use? I asked. Or does this just use the buckshots?
It's a shell when you're talking about shotguns, Darwin corrected me. And, of course, you can change your ammo. Buckshot is a type of shotgun shell. Sprays small pellets in a cone where you point it. You can also get big old hunks of lead to shoot out, but instead of calling it a shotgun bullet, we call them a slug. What have you been using, anyway?
It just appears with the gun, I replied lamely.
Well, there must be some way for you to adjust what you're using, he mused. It doesn't do you much good to have a 500 if all you can use it for is tossing out chicken feed.
Well, I know the Maverick has buckshot, I said quickly. It was on the box we found with the Maverick.
Did it tell you anything else?
The ex-trooper pressed. 00 with 12 GA?
Double aught, Darwin corrected. 12 gauge. Probably 2¾ with 9 pellets. That's the most common.
Yeah, that's what it said on the box. God, you really know a lot about guns.
I'm just an old fart that knows old fart things, Charles scoffed. Everyone used to know all this stuff before the meteorite hit and the mages outlawed guns. Do you know how to load the Maverick?
I hesitated.
We can cover that too,
Darwin sighed. I guess I hadn't thought much about all this, I replied. This sounds complicated.
Well, I suppose it can be, Darwin conceded. But we'll learn ya. Now, let's move on to an actual rifle.
He took the Mossberg shotgun from my hands, placed it on the table, and then opened the last case. Inside nestled a sleeker, longer weapon with a silver barrel, a dusky gray stock, and an hourglass-shaped addition above the top of the barrel. This one looked elegant next to the workaday features of the shotgun, like the wealthy matron next to the dowdy floor scrubber. That's a rifle, I declared happily as I recognized the familiar shape.
A Winchester Model 70,
Darwin intoned as he ran through his bullet check.
Extreme weather version with a 22-inch barrel. It uses 308 bullets, which is the perfect round for killing anything on this planet from up close or about 300 yards away. On a good day, I can hit targets at 500, but the bullet is a bit of a heavy guy, so you really have to account for drop for any distance over 3.
He handed the rifle to me once the check was complete, and I ran my hands over the smooth metal of the barrel and the patterned surface of the stock. The feeling of the surge of power as the rifle imprinted was as glorious as always, and I had to force myself to focus on the matter at hand and not become lost in the euphoria. When the ex-trooper started to reach for the weapon, I repeated the check I'd just watched in exactly the same order. When I heard a grunt of approval, I flashed another smile, then turned my attention back to the rifle. It was about the same weight as the Mossberg shotgun, though it didn't feel like it was all concentrated into one tight spot. I held it up to my shoulder and cheek, the way Evan had shown me, and let out a sigh of pleasure at how beautifully aligned it was. I realized then that the strange device on top let me see faraway objects as clearly as the trees right in front of me, and I was reminded of the telescopes that the pirates in the ancient stories always carried. "Wow," was all I could say. "And I like this close-look device on top. It's like one of those pirate things."
"That's the scope," Darwin explained. "Helps you locate and focus on your target. A must-have if you plan on shooting from any real far distances. Now, this rifle only holds 5 rounds, but it's easy to reload, and there's very little difference between firing hot or cold barrel."
"Is that a problem in other guns?" I asked. Darwin stared at me for a moment, then shook his head.
"I can see we have a lot of ground to cover, but yes, that can become an issue. Now, if you're just hunting something for dinner, then you probably won't fire enough shots to really heat up the barrel that hot. But if you're fending off an army of mages, well, that could be a problem."
"But not with the Winchester," I said as I pulled it down and studied its length again.
"Main issue with this rifle will be the recoil," Darwin added. "It does have that pad for the shoulder, but you'll still feel a kick with any high-performance cartridge."
"Like the Snubnose," I offered.
"Well,"
Darwin hesitated, then finally nodded.
"I suppose you could make that comparison, although they're really 2 very different weapons, and the Winchester is going to pack more punch with most of the cartridges it uses."
"But you can use this to hunt large animals," I asked, as I thought about his initial description.
"Yep," Darwin replied. "Wild boar, elk, moose, bigger deer, or even bears. It's not something that you would keep by your bed and pull out to shoot an intruder. It's more for long-distance shooting, and it will kill a human if you hit him pretty much anywhere."
"Even on the foot?" I asked.
"We'll blow it clean off. Like I said, this is a hell of a round. It's made for big game. Humans can be killed with just a .22 if you get them in the head or chest."
"That's the rifle I have," I said. "And yeah, I've been making sure I aim for the head or chest. I noticed if I hit them anywhere else, they wouldn't go down."
"A .22 is fine for hunting varmints and such," Charles said as he nodded. "But you'll love this .308.
"I could have used this one on the way here," I sighed, as I gazed down at the beautiful rifle. "We ran into a bear just outside the wastelands."
"Noise usually works well to frighten bears away," Darwin noted. "Unless it's a mama bear with cubs."
"It was frightened away by noise," I replied, though I didn't mention the scavengers who had been the source of the noise. Darwin took the rifle from my hands, then placed it carefully into the case. "So I thought the mages said that no one made bullets anymore," I said as I studied the Mossberg shotgun that still sat on the table.
"I mostly make my own ammo these days, though I still have a few rounds of the good stuff squirreled away,"
Darwin replied.
"Have the basics I'll need to make more in some of those boxes you carried over."
"Oh," I said in surprise, as I tried to imagine what was required to make a bullet. "I thought it was some big, complicated process."
"Pfft,"
Darwin chuckled.
"You can make a basic bullet easily enough. In fact, in the Old West, most hunters and trackers made their own bullets at some point. You might find yourself in the middle of nowhere and running low on bullets, or find yourself in town without any money. As long as you had lead, you could melt and mold, and gunpowder to fill it with, you were good."
"But don't you have to make the gunpowder also?" I asked.
"These days you do," Darwin agreed. I've worked out my own formulas over the years based on what I could scavenge. Spent some time north of here, near the Picatinny Arsenal. I found all sorts of great supplies there, enough to last 2 or 3 lifetimes.
Is that what was in the rest of those boxes? I laughed.
Partially, Darwin admitted, because a gun isn't any good if it doesn't have any bullets.
Oh, that's true, I agreed, as I remembered telling Sorsha she could use the Maverick like a club if we couldn't find any bullets. Would you like to see the Mossberg Maverick we found in the wastelands? Maybe you could show me how to load the bullets, I mean shells, we found.
Oh, that would be nice, Darwin agreed. I haven't seen a new gun in ages.
I ducked back inside the treehouse and searched through our satchels until I found the Maverick and the box of shells. I grabbed those and returned to the deck where Darwin was running a cloth over the shotgun.
An old over-under shotgun,
Darwin sighed as he took the weapon from my hands and quickly checked both barrels for ammunition.
People normally used a design like this to hunt birds, but this one has a short barrel, so it's for home defense. It just has a single trigger, so that means it fires one barrel and then the other.
Yeah, I said. I could only fire the one I made twice, and then it disappeared. Darwin admired the Maverick for a few more moments, then carefully placed it on the table. I started to pick it up, then remembered to check for bullets. I went through the same routine I had just seen the ex-trooper perform, and he nodded in approval.
That Maverick is about as basic as they come, Darwin noted. But in a pinch, they'll do the job. Now, to load your shells, make sure you've got the safety on. Then just press that button again and slide around into each chamber. Make sure the plastic end is the one heading down the barrel, and the metal end is the one facing the end of the stock.
I did as he instructed, then clicked the barrel into place.
Good, Darwin declared. Now, unload it like you would during a check.
I reversed the procedure so that I had 2 shells in my hand when I was done. I returned them to the box and smiled at Darwin. The ex-trooper looked slightly more pleased with my gun-handling skills, though I still hadn't earned a smile or even a nod of approval yet.
"Where's that snub nose you've been walking around with?"
the ex-trooper asked. I pulled the gun from my jacket and handed it to Darwin. He started to examine the gun, then shook his head, and I knew I had somehow just ruined whatever good feelings he had about me.
"Cripes," he muttered. I just thought you left the safety off at the house to show that you were ready to shoot. Are you saying you've been carrying this thing around like this, and all the other guns loaded and without checking the safety?
Yes, I guessed.
This is how people shoot themselves, Darwin muttered. Okay, this little switch here is the safety, and each of the guns I showed you have some version of it. Its main purpose is to prevent people from shooting the gun accidentally. Now, when you're really ready to fire, you just slide it back, and now you can fire the gun.
I don't think there's one on the Colt, I said as I studied the tiny switch on the snub nose.
There may not be one if it's an old timer. And by that, I mean way older than me. They only have them on later guns. If you think about it, it's a miracle more people didn't shoot themselves in the foot back in the day.
Let me use my magic to summon a gun. I set the safety on the snub nose, then tucked it back into my jacket. I was determined to prove that I could safely handle a gun, and I decided that I would do it with a gun of my own creation. I held my hand out for several moments as I tried to settle on which one I wanted to hold, but it was hard to pick just one.
Go for the Winchester rifle,
Darwin suggested as he watched me grapple with the question.
I'm curious to see if it'll have the scope or not.
Oh, fair enough, I agreed, as I pictured the sleek beauty, complete with scope. I felt the tingle in my fingertips, and then the striated surface of the Winchester. When I looked down, the slender weapon was there, though my version had the faint blue light that seemed to be the mark of my magic. It also had the scope, though mine looked less worn than the original.
Oh, it even has the scope!
Darwin gasped as I held up the Winchester.
Yeah, I didn't realize it would bring that too, but I thought about it when I used my magic.
It was a little heavier than the original because of the bullets, but otherwise it felt the same. I peered through the scope at a pair of squirrels that sat on a distant branch and noted how well the cheek rest seemed to fit my face. The silver barrel glinted in the traces of sunlight that managed to make it through the clouds, and I felt a moment of pure satisfaction as I melded with the rifle.
May I? Darwin asked in a reverent tone. I hated to turn it over so soon, but Darwin was the reason I even had access to such an amazing weapon, so I held it out toward the older man. The ex-trooper took it with both hands and weighed it for a moment, checked to see it was loaded, and then checked the safety. He lifted a small, angled handle, then returned it to its position. He moved the safety backward then, and there was a click as he moved it into place. Satisfied, he brought the rifle up to his shoulder for a look along its sight.
"Nice that it comes with ammunition," he remarked. "Could have used that in the old days."
"On the downside, it disappears after I use the last bullet, and I can't create another one for a full day," I sighed.
"But you can create other guns during that time?"
Darwin asked. "Yep, until they run out of ammo," I replied.
Strange," Darwin mused. "But then I never understood the whole magic thing."
"I don't understand it much myself," I admitted. "That's what's been nice about having Sorsha along. She's been able to explain some of this. And when Evan said you knew a lot about guns, I really had it in my head that I wanted to meet you and maybe learn something about them." Darwin didn't respond to that. Instead, he lowered the weapon, checked the safety again, then pointed to the angled lever on the side of the gun. When I nodded, he lifted the lever away from the gun and pulled it back toward the stock.
"This is the bolt," he said, as he showed me the metal tube. "And this is the magazine. As you can see, that's where the bullets are. If this were a normal gun, you'd reload it by pushing the bullets into the magazine."
"Oh," I commented as I peered inside the Winchester.
"Normally, you wouldn't store guns with bullets in them,"
he continued as he pulled one of the bullets out and examined it.
"If you went hunting, for example, you'd remove any bullets you didn't fire. Of course, a lot of people kept a loaded weapon in the house, the theory being that you wouldn't have time to load the gun if someone breaks in during the middle of the night."
"But you don't like that," I guessed by the somber tone of his voice.
"Most people aren't well trained with a gun," he replied. "And there are a lot of other people in the house usually than just the one who bought the gun. I saw a lot of cases of what goes wrong when there's a loaded weapon just lying around. Truthfully, I'm rather amazed that you haven't managed to shoot yourself yet."
"I've been careful," I said defensively, "and I only pull the weapon when I have to."
"What would happen if we removed all the bullets? Would the gun remain because you hadn't fired the bullets, or would it disappear because the bullets were gone, period?"
"Huh, I don't know," I said.
"We could find out," Darwin suggested.
"Not with the Winchester," I said quickly. "But there's only one bullet left in the snubnose. We could take that out." Darwin held out his hand and I pulled the Smith & Wesson snubnose out from the pocket of my coat. I begged its forgiveness for the sacrifice it was about to make, then handed the gun to Darwin.
"Okay, put your thumb on the hammer and your index finger on the side of the cylinder," he said as he demonstrated. "Now with your other hand, put your thumb on the cylinder release and your index finger on the cylinder. Since this is a Smith & Wesson double-action revolver, you'll move this button, which is the cylinder release, forward. Now you can just roll the cylinder out of the frame. Make sure you keep your index finger on the cylinder so it doesn't roll back inside. Good so far?"
"Good so far," I agreed.
"This little stem is the ejector release," Darwin continued. "To clear this weapon, we press that down and tilt the gun back, and anything still in the chambers will fall out."
"Okay," I replied as I tried to hide the anxiety I felt.
"Now we can just slide that bullet out,"
Darwin said as he tilted the snubnose. The bullet slipped from the chamber and fell into his hand, and for a moment it looked as if the gun and bullet would remain. But then the snubnose started to shimmer and lose shape, and finally it vanished with a little pop. The bullet remained for nearly 20 seconds, but then it disappeared as well, and I couldn't tell who was more disappointed, me or Darwin.
"Well, I guess that answers that question," Darwin sighed. "Looks like you'll need to keep them loaded. It's great that the bullet sticks around for a bit longer, though. It means your last shot will still do its job."
I heard footsteps behind me and looked over my shoulder. Sorsha had returned, and the crisp air had given her cheeks a rosy glow. She looked stunning at the moment, and I even heard Darwin give a grunt of approval. "How'd it go?" I asked as she set the bow and quiver on the table next to the Winchester.
"Good,"
she replied as she studied the rifle.
Well, I'm definitely rusty, but I can still hit my targets. Have you two been having fun?
Charles showed me three new guns, I replied without bothering to hide my excitement. The one you're looking at is a Winchester Model 70.
It's got that strange glow, so it must be the one you created,
she said with a smile. It is, I agreed as I picked the weapon up again. It still felt perfect in my hands, but also muffled somehow. I couldn't understand what was different until I spotted the safety. It was still in a locked position, so I moved the bolt handle up and down, then pushed the safety forward. I heard the click and smiled, then pointed the gun toward a nearby tree.
Be careful, Darwin warned. We don't want to alert the whole town we're here.
Right, I agreed as I lowered the weapon and replaced the safety.
Did you learn all about guns?
Sorsha teased. Well, I learned more, I replied, though there's still a lot we need to cover. You should hold one just to get a feel for it. You'll probably have to use one someday soon, and it would be better if you were already comfortable with it.
I don't know,
Sorsha said warily. I set the rifle on the table, then glanced toward Darwin. When I pointed at the small case that held the Glock, he nodded. Okay, 5 rules for handling a gun, I recited as I opened the gun and removed the Glock 9mm.
5 rules,
Sorsha repeated as she studied the weapon in my hand. First, always point it in a safe direction, so away from everyone else.
Got it.
Second, treat every gun as if it was loaded.
So what's involved in that?
Sorsha asked. I smiled, then showed her how to check the Glock for bullets. I started with the magazine, then showed her how to slide the back part to check the barrel. I was happy to see that the blonde mage watched everything very carefully, then nodded when she understood.
I think I can do that.
It's a little different on each gun, but it's not hard to figure out once you understand how guns work, Darwin assured her.
Okay, so what's the next rule?
Next, keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to fire.
Like a crossbow.
Not just keep your finger off the trigger, Darwin amended. Keep it outside the guard. We don't want any accidental shootings around here.
The Irishwoman nodded, which earned a smile from Darwin. I felt a moment of frustration that the mage had earned the ex-trooper's praise so easily, then chalked it up to her spectacular good looks.
Rule 4, I announced with appropriate gravity. Make sure you know where your target is and everything that's between you and your target, as well as anything behind your target.
Okay,
Sorsha said with less confidence as she thought through everything I'd said.
So you don't shoot someone or something else by accident. You just need to be aware of everything around you when you're using a gun.
That makes sense. Just from what I've seen over these last few days, it's clear they're much more dangerous than bows and arrows, and there's no time to react.
Right you are, Darwin declared.
Okay, last rule, I cut in, then paused for a moment. Well, we haven't figured out how to make this one work, but you should always wear eye and ear protection.
Oh, I can believe that after being around them.
We'll try to find a Gander Mountain or Bass Pro Shop or something, Darwin added, which drew puzzled looks from both me and Sorsha. But don't let me interrupt. You're doing good.
Here, I said as I handed the weapon to Sorsha. Try it. Sorsha held it for a moment, then glanced at Darwin.
I should check it first, right?
She's quick,
Darwin chuckled. Sorsha performed the bullet check more slowly than I had, and I realized she was using the time to study the gun. When she was satisfied that there were no bullets, she lifted it with one hand and pointed it toward a nearby tree.
It may not feel heavy, but it's still got enough kick to force your arm up if you don't keep a tight grip. You should keep both hands on the gun.
Sorsha nodded, then placed her other hand on the gun. Now just pull the trigger, I said. Sorsha took a deep breath, then pulled the trigger.
That was easy,
she said as she lowered the weapon and stared at it.
We'll let you practice with some ammo later, so you can get used to the recoil.
Later,
Sorsha agreed as she handed the Glock to the ex-trooper.
I'm happy with the ball for now.
I'd say we had a good lesson today, I declared.
That we did, Darwin agreed. But I've got some more work to do before we head into the town. Why don't you two toss together some dinner while I wrap up a few things?
What things? I asked.
Oh, I think I'll surprise you, Darwin snickered as he gathered up his weapons.